This short presentation will consider the context and achievements of Craig as a visual artist and suggest points of legacy as an image maker. The woodblock became the main vehicle for his visual imagery. This choice was significant. The 1880s and 1890s saw this small-scale art form become a progressive vehicle in Europe for challenging the prevailing 19th century tradition. William Nicholson, who Craig met and befriended in Uxbridge in 1893, was a leading figure in this revival. The image was now to be originated and realized by one artist printmaker rather than artists with designs realized by an engraver, and no longer to focus on detail and elaboration. And perhaps in this move, this very significant move to a single artist, you have the idea, I think, of singular control that is relates to Craig's theatre vision that's already been mentioned. Nicholson not only taught Craig the essentials of how to cut a piece of hard boxwood, but with scorper and chisel, how to create designs of remarkable simplicity and boldness. And as seen here in Nicholson's An Alphabet of 1896 to 98, and Craig's The Vagabonds of the late 1890s. I think it's 1898 this date, but Craig's prints do need to be thoroughly catalogued. That's a job that remains. Both concern themselves with clearly defined positive and negative areas, light and darker shapes, working with additional areas of wash colouring. Within a year, Craig asserts his own response to the intricacies of the Victorian period in a groundbreaking piece of illustrated text, the children's book, Gordon Craig's Book of Penny Toys, 1899. This is a single sheet in the V&A collection related to 20 woodblock illustrations derived from a collection of simple wooden penny toys printed on cream sugar paper. The published volume of 550 copies being accompanied with elephant type used in old mid-19th century playbills. Henry Irving as Dubosch in The Lion's Mail dates from 1898, the year when at least 72 prints were produced, 87 in 1899, 41 in 1900, and 72 in 1901. Is it an exaggeration to see this seemingly modest study? It's 13.4 by 12.1 centimetres as one of Irving's most celebrated roles as part of an international avant-garde, and ask the question. Of course, the very nature of the graphic medium allows it to be widely and easily distributed and exhibited across national boundaries. The artist Max Klinger's proclamation in 1895 in a letter to his patron Julius Albers that drawing, and by extension the monochromatic, was the true vehicle for fantasy in art, while colour definition in paint left little or nothing to the imagination, proved a liberating influence on the next generation of German expressionist artists. Wagner's idea of the synthesis of the arts, the Gesamtkunstwerk, not only informed Craig's developing ideas about the theatre, but more generally was drawn upon in the promotion of the graphic arts as an equal rather than a second-class art form. Craig would have had direct contact to the application of this ethos when he moved to Berlin in 1904. By 1914, Klinger registered as one of the most expensive of printmakers, his work almost certainly known to Craig. This is a step from Klinger's Dramen series, 1883. The composition's exaggerated verticality and dramatic figuration with light and half-hidden forms, not without comparison, seems to me, with Craig's architectural sequence of designs for a stage scene dated from 1907. The idea of the graphic arts tackling serious and challenging as well as gently satirical subject matter can be seen in The Lunatic. Again, even smaller in size, of 1899, Craig's visualization of a quotation from a short story by Oliver Madox Hofer, where a mad figure imagines himself to have been a curate after having first been Caesar. At the same time, in Paris, the Swiss artist Felix Valentin had established himself as a leading promoter of the black and white woodcut as part of a symbolist program of original image making and anti-naturalism. This is Valentin's The Milliner, La Modiste of 1894, strikingly simplified in its figuration and flattened by the elimination of the horizontal line and the cutting of the heads along the top edge to bring the figures up against the picture plane. Valentin's work would have been accessible to Craig through the periodicals La Revue Blanche and La Stampe Originale. Craig was himself a constant exhibitor and distributor of his drawings and printed work, whether in his own periodical, The Page, 1898 to 1901, or in the series of solo and group exhibitions dating from 1902, when he first exhibited at the Bailey Gallery in London. This was quickly followed by membership of the somewhat exclusive Society of 12, which focused on the principles of truth to material and originality of design, and saw him in the company of the leading artists of the day, Augustus John, Charles Ricketts, Charles Shannon, William Nicholson, and William Rothenstein. In spite of leaving Britain in 1904, Craig's prints were regularly exhibited at the Society's exhibitions between 1904 and 6, 1908 and 1912. And significantly, it was this period, this kind of hiatus period, that gave rise to a radical approach to material that he chose to work with, and that most essential of colours that came to define his visual imagery, black. The Black Figure series represents an imaginative transformation from one medium into another. As Craig writes, these black figures were white to begin with, for they were cut out of bits of wood which lay around the rooms I worked in Florence, London, and Paris. This is one of the wooden figures of Ophelia. His son, Edward Craig, elaborates on the printing of these pieces of soft wood, notably poplar and pear, originally made as small medals to work out stage movements. Quote, so he dabbed it all over with ink, put the dampened paper on it, smoothed it with an ivory knife, and there was a beautiful black figure. I show here a selection of these abstractive figures to give an idea of the remarkable range of formal textual expression that Craig achieved over the 13 years from 1907 to 1930 that he worked on the series. Simplifying his figures and his figurations into essential expressions of form and emotion. This is one of the fences from the Hamlet series. Capturing of physical presence in Moses. Contrasting tonality of black in the mask of the bird dancer in Hamlet alongside the lighter grain printing of the costume. I think you can hopefully just see that. The resonance of light, white light shaping the silhouetted forms of Hamlet and his Damien, offset by the warmth of a cream paper. This is, I took this image from an impression in the V&A, and For those that have Lindsay Newman's seminal book on the black figures, you can see smaller and larger proofs of this image, further evidence of the varying of black and grey printing for the Damien figure. The sharp contoured sensuousness of the black girl of 1913, which draws parallels with the severe purity of Eric Gill's figures from the 1920s. The beautifully grained grey tonality of the stylish Osric. The full throttle display of emotional intensity of hunger, which Craig simply described as good, a tall, thin figure with fearful jaws, lots of bones and flying. One should recall here that Edvard Munch had deliberately utilized the grain of the woodblock as part of his designs as early as the 1890s, cutting into the raw striations with the gouge tool. This proved a decisive influence on the Die Brucker artists. Working in Dresden from 1905, but only receiving widespread popular success on their move to Berlin in 1911. Erich Heckel's Bulls of 1908 achieves a nervous tension with solid black and lowered uninked areas. In similar vein, and in the same year, interestingly, Craig adopts deep cuts and raw mark-making for Hecuba. Craig never abandoned the figurative presence, even in his most abstract designs for stage scenes. In his free direct working with the grain of the woodblock, he adhered to the concept of truth to material that would have been directly known to him through the 19th century arts and craft movement. As with his theatrical vision, he embraced the tradition of his chosen medium while making the transition, adapting the graphic medium for his modernist ideas about space and light. And it was this exploratory approach which not only places him in the company of other European progressives, such as Odilon Redon and Valentin, but also connects with a thread of expansionism and openness towards material possibilities in the later 20th century. In the post-Second World War Britain, Michael Rothenstein, the son of Craig's friend and fellow exhibitor William Rothenstein, became a leading figure to exploit the inherent physical qualities of the woodblock. Yeah. In Craigian fashion, younger Rothenstein, Michael Rothenstein, encountered by chance in the late 1950s the remarkable qualities of a stack of elmwood on a family picnic. I was spellbound by their magnificent surface movement. It raised the question, why not work on such surfaces, conspiring with their wonderful movement? And this is one of these pieces of found wood, inked and printed by Rothenstein and retained really as ongoing research material to be incorporated into his editioned work. And I show you here Tournament of 1963. Michael Rothenstein probably would have first heard about Craig through his father, though they appear never to have met. And Craig's books do not figure in the younger Rothenstein's library. Much later, however, he did establish a direct Craig connection when he met David Lees, one of Craig's sons, on a number of occasions in Italy. The 1967 exhibition organized by George Nash at the V&A, something of a watershed exhibition, provided a younger generation of British artists at that time with the opportunity to re-engage with Craig. Individual responses, for example, by Peter Blake to some of Craig's most intricate early engravings have been referenced by Pat Gilmore. They've already been referenced by Pat Gilmore. I would like to finally focus on the modernist concept of movement and progressive change. Central to Craig's move towards a new theatre was the visual translation of his ideas into, quote, studies of motion, that which moves. He appears to have taken palpable delight in using a static medium, i.e. the woodblock, to explore the notion of motion. I'm going to show you here three from the 1907 series of soft and hard ground etchings, described as 15 separate motions or moods of movement, made up of screens to provide a constantly variable arrangement of right angles and flat walls, with light running in and out of structural surfaces. And it's this, I think, intriguing relationship between this small static medium and the idea of progressive change on stage that certainly absorbed Craig in his extensive image making and extensive print work. And to make a parallel, really, a reference, the same abstract notion of movement in space is explored in another art form, in David Bomberg's Russian Ballet, a tribute to Diaghilev's company, in booklet form, with Bomberg's only published poem and five colour lithographs, dating from 1914 to 19. The simplicity of this piece of printed ephemeral material would have almost certainly appealed to Craig. Of course, we don't know if he actually owned a copy of this very important Russian Ballet pamphlet program. Not to be overlooked, it was the move to expand the possibilities of media, including print and drawing, that played a major part in the pre-First World War move to free subjects of descriptive change. This is another progressive lithograph, coloured lithograph from Bomberg's series. As late as the 1950s, a group of abstract artists in Britain actively embraced drawing as part of their seeking of equivalence for the process of change. This is Kenneth Martin's sequence of pen and pencil drawings, Metamorphosis B of 1974. We have this at Birmingham Museum and Art Gallery, where line and movement is taken through 10 stages of transformation on small A5 sheets of cartridge paper to finally revert to its beginnings. Craig's own words from the 1908 catalogue of motion etchings do not seem out of place here. Quote, "The imitation of nature has no part in this art. The mood and thought of the artist passing through this instrument shall raise it one mutable form after another. Living only a moment, ceaselessly, if imperceptibly, changing, arriving at last at its final and definite state, to reform itself once again and again, an infinite progression." Craig reached the height of his fame as a visual artist in the 1920s when invited in 1920 by Robert Gibbons to become a founder member of the Society of Wood Engravers, the year that he cut one of his most well-known and dramatically spare wood engravings, The Storm from King Lear. 5 years later, still challenging orthodoxies, he led the split and formation of the English Wood Engraving Society, seeking to assert its independence from the tradition of book illustration. Craig, the image maker, was not limited by national boundaries or the hierarchies of medium. And indeed, this is his critique of high culture. Perhaps a good place to end with Kultur, culture, Cultura SC of 1915. He grew upon the avant-garde graphics of William Nicholson, as well as from the latest European art, and used the visual medium to make potent connections with other art forms. In subversive fashion, he was committed to the small work of art having its place within the modernist ethos. When so much of the most exhibited art today is concerned with scale, the small writ large, the large writ small, the time might be just right, certainly is overdue, for the art world in particular to reclaim the place of the small scale image within Craig's grand vision of the arts for a new age.